Welcome to Crunching Tackles, where we break down the hardest hitting social issues in sports. On today's show, March Madness has come to an end, and we have a lot to talk about both on and off the court. My name is Chad Wiley, and with me, as always, is John Dekersov. And John, on a scale of about 1 to 10, how badly do your eyes hurt from staring directly at the sun?
I actually did. Brief backstory. So there were clouds all over Nashville. So I basically saw nothing. However, I did look up when I went out of my house to try to see if I could find the sun, and then caught a glimpse of the sun slightly behind the moon with my bare eyes. So I'll report back. It's been a day. I think I'm okay. The jury's still out on that. But I did see a cataclysmic social event. Which I don't think you got to see.
No, I did not leave the inside of my house for the entire duration of the solar eclipse. that does segue to just like a brief housekeeping thing, which is that I apologize in advance if my voice sounds bad or if my thoughts are not, you know, particularly cogent, because I am battling illness. It started out as the seasonal pollen allergies, which have just been at an all-time high across my area. And hit me like a freight train, and then my immune system collapsed, and I continued to get sick. And then my wife left me to fend for myself. Good for her. She didn't leave me. She went on a work trip. So I'm just home alone, popping Dayquil, watching movies, and just trying to get through this. So happy to be on the podcast with you tonight.
You are a warrior, much like Zach Edey yesterday.
That's right.
It seems like it seems like a true warrior, but a losing warrior. It has felt like throughout this last week against just a relentless offense.
Yeah, truly like a good force, but like it's a force that's not quite unstoppable, that's trying to hit an object that is quite literally immovable, is how I would describe both my fight with this illness and Zach Edey's performance against the UConn Huskies, which is what we're going to get into, John. But I'm glad that you had a good eclipse. I hope that everyone listening also had a good eclipse and used all of the important safety features and equipment that would be required to make that an enjoyable experience.
Yeah, I 100% echo that sentiment. We do have a lot of basketball to talk about. But before we get to all the real basketball, I think we just need to briefly acknowledge the utter dominance that my bracket had, both in our Crunching Tackles pool and really all other pools. I don't know if you have a statement about that, but I just wanted to put that out there.
Dominance in the sense that you picked the champion correctly and I did not. I agree with you. Beyond that, we were pretty much neck and neck the whole way.
Well, I did have, no one cares about this, but I did have NC State in the Final Four, and I think that is something to be proud of.
That was very, very impressive. I thought that you were going to do something which would be much more courteous and respectful to me, which would be to wish me a very happy Masters week, John.
I'll be so honest with you. I had no idea that was this week. And I think that really goes to show how strange I feel right now about the sports calendar. Like, it's April. March Madness is over. The NFL is over. Like, baseball has started. The NBA Finals and the Stanley Cup Finals are, like, not that far away. The soccer season is almost over, and it is going to be a very dramatic ending to the season indeed. I don't know. I just feel like all of a sudden we blinked and like the year's almost over.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you said, playoffs are happening soon. Major League Baseball started. Everything's been going on, but I would not be myself if I did not say the Masters are this week.
And that's correct.
It's very exciting. And some of us are very much looking forward to our weekend of truly one of the great weekly parts of my annual calendar, I would say. Mm-hmm.
Did you see John Rahm say that he really wished that his move to LIV would have done more to unify golf? Did you see that?
I did see that. I found that quite strange. I also, while we're doing this brief aside, part of my week was spent watching the entire second season of Full Swing, as I briefly texted you about on Saturday this week, and they made no mention whatsoever of Jon Rahm, one of the world's best players, going to LIV. Like, it didn't even come up.
Not at all.
Which I thought was, no, they didn't even like mention it, which I thought was a very, 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 very strange omission from what was a pretty mixed season of television about the 2023 year in golf.
I think we were very excited about this Netflix experiment in sports shows, which obviously Drive to Survive is kind of the star child of, and obviously has done great work in convincing
you. As I know.
Yeah, as you know. But like, we really enjoyed, I think, both of us, the first seasons of Breakpoint, the tennis show, and Full Swing, the golf show. If you haven't watched them, they're like kind of insider documentaries that focus on individual players and are trying to like really highlight kind of what makes the sport unique for fans who maybe don't know a lot about how the sports operate. I think we've seen some pretty big omissions in these last, the second seasons of both shows.
Yeah, we talked
regarding
about
social
the,
issues.
We talked about the Breakpoint and mm-hmm. how they had a episode about Alexander Zverev and didn't talk about any of the allegations against him. I think we talked about that on a podcast.
We did. And I think what stands out to me about that is that, I don't know, I think that if you're marketing a show as being a really unique, high quality behind the scenes production that's different from like your normal sports documentary, quote unquote, I think that really has to be your brand, that players want to be transparent. And I think that was kind of the brand that they established early on. And I feel like they're kind of branching away from that now, more into the normal PR sports documentary feel that, you know, a certain amount of people watch those, but those aren't going to do numbers and they're not going to bring fans into sports in like a culturally transformational way.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be very interesting to me because, as we talked about one or two podcasts ago, I think two, this is going to be this next season of Drive to Survive is going to be the first one with a fairly significant moral implication about one of the primary mm-hmm. characters. And it'll be interesting to see if that's addressed. I don't know if the same executives at Netflix do different versions of this show, but I have found, and kind of what you said, both the Full Swing and the Breakpoint to be quite timid. Mm-hmm. And so far, Formula One has not been quite as timid, at least from what I've seen, Drive to Survive. But this is going to be, I think, one of the first major tests of that. And so it'll be very interesting to see how they handle it. And it's a season of television that I'm very much, I think, looking forward to, even more so than some of the regular, like, scripted drama TV that I always, you know, am excited to watch this year. So,
That's interesting stuff.
All right, we want to get to the basketball stuff. Yeah, let's do that. You want to just do this in chronological order, women's and then men, since that was the order in which the games were played?
I think so. And I think, I don't know, I think we should take them in that order because, to me, the story of March is the women's tournament.
Yeah.
Like, no question about it.
Yeah. I mean, more exciting, I would say, all the games were. Really, really good Final Four match between Iowa and UConn. That was very, very competitive and came down to the wire. A pretty good final. I think that a lot of the games were really good. I think the coverage of it was, obviously we'll talk about it, but like more than I've ever seen before. Mm-hmm. This was also, and I could be wrong about this, but I don't remember the men's and women's tournaments going on quite as concurrently to each other in past years. I don't know if that was a mm-hmm. scheduling change. I have a memory of like the women's tournament kind of being midweek, so as not to conflict with the men's tournament in previous years. I could be completely wrong about that, but that's just the memory coming to my head. And mm-hmm. so to have the women's and the men's tournaments overlap on 3 out of the 4 days per weekend that they were competing, and to have the women's tournament consistently be a better product and honestly a more popular product than the men has been, I think, a cultural thing that we definitely are excited to talk about today.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, it's crazy, but essentially all of that is thanks to Iowa star Caitlin Clark. I don't think
of college basketball.
Of college basketball? I mean, probably, right? And people, I mean, there's a whole nother dialogue about that I find somewhat tedious, and we'll get into a little bit later, as all GOAT debates are. But that being said, I mean, when have we ever seen a singular star do this to a sport in this manner. I think the Caitlin Clark phenomenon in the last two seasons has been incredibly unique. I think you do see, obviously, like, singular stars transform interest in a sport. I'm sure, like, Tiger Woods, golf was popular before, but I'm sure Tiger Woods in that time in the 2000s was like a pull that magnetized golf viewership. Serena Williams, I think, is another great example of one person's stardom kind of elevating a sport to another level. But I think, like, what's remarkable is that this college player has done that to women's college basketball in a way that genuinely is completely unparalleled in the women's game specifically.
Yeah, to find a comp for Caitlin Clark, you have to go to a sport that isn't always popular, which usually means you're looking at the Olympics. And so, like, Michael Phelps 2008 or Simone Biles 2016, or, I mean, this is a silly example, but even like Matt Hamilton in 2018 and that American Dad's curling team, that was really fun. Like, I think you have to look at those kind of sports that don't get a lot of consistent eyeballs, and then one person, either due to their in the play excellence or dynamic personality or kind of a combination of the two, kind of take the world by storm. And in like a non-Olympic type of sport, I can't find something quite like this.
It's so rare
in the memory of my sports encyclopedia of a brain, to the extent that it is. Before we go too much into Caitlin Clark, it is worth talking about the team that actually won the women's tournament, which is South Carolina. And I don't even know quite what tier of dynasty they are currently in, because the Dawn Staley experience at South Carolina is an almost unparalleled level of success.
That's exactly right. They've won two of the last three March Madness titles. Obviously, LSU won last year, so they sandwiched that title. They've lost three games in the last 3 years and went through this entire season undefeated, went all the way to the championship game, and then snuffed out the flame of college basketball's current biggest star. And I think that's why it is important to start this conversation with Caitlin Clark, because the national conversation was Caitlin Clark for this entire time. She annihilated LSU, who obviously Iowa lost to in the championship game last year. She scored 41 points. It was a remarkable performance, and you started to feel like maybe destiny was on her side and she was going to lift like a fine Iowa team to a college championship. And what happened was the team that is actually the best team in women's college basketball right now won the championship. And that game started, right? And, you know, if you watched it, Clark exploded in the first quarter. She scored 18 points, which I think was the most in a quarter, if I remember correctly, in a women's college game ever in a finals, which is just remarkable. Like, she was completely unstoppable. And in real time, South Carolina adjusted. They started shutting her down. Clark started missing shots. She finished the game with 30 points, which is, you know, a lot. But it was not enough to deal with the physicality, with the intensity, with the ball movement of South Carolina. And you felt the difference in coaching, in quality, in depth between these two teams throughout the game. And I think the most important stat, Caitlin Clark may have had 30 points, but South Carolina's bench outscored Iowa's bench 37-0. And that, if anything, tells you the storyline of the difference between these two sides and the remarkable coaching job that Dawn Staley has done with that program.
Yeah, and that starts at recruiting. Like, that starts with having good enough players on your bench that want to be at your program, that know that they're not going to be starters but are committed to the program that you're building. And I think we talked about this, you and I talked about this during the men's game, but college basketball seems uniquely suited to kind of be the anti-solo superstar sport in the sense that when coaching and cohesion go up against individual excellence, in most other sports, individual excellence has more of a chance to win than it does in college basketball. In college basketball, it seems like there's something that kind of equalizes that playing field, and consistency and depth often trump talent in that particular sport. And obviously South Carolina has been the most consistent and the highest performing team of the last half decade or so. And they are by so much the deserving champions. I don't want to let us get past what to me was the best game of the tournament in either gender, which was Iowa beating LSU.
That's right.
This was the championship revenge game from last year. And it was the most talked about game going into it. Obviously, there's a bit of a rivalry between LSU star Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark. LSU won the championship and then got better over the in the offseason by recruiting Haley Van Lith from Louisville, who was one of the top five or so point guards in the country. So they kind of got even more stacked. They also have other great players. And Caitlin Clark just completely torched them. And mm-hmm. Angel Reese fouled out of the game. And Caitlin went for 41 points and got the revenge. And to me, I think even if you aren't the champion of the tournament, to go on a run where you beat the defending champion LSU, and then you beat the historic dynasty UConn, and then put up 30 points in the final game that you lose, I think it's a tournament for the ages by her. And it's a really, really remarkable achievement that she's done on top of what was already one of the most remarkable regular seasons we've ever seen by any athlete in college sports.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she is the all-time leader in college basketball points, both men's and women's, which is remarkable.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just incredible to watch her play. And I think that's what's magnetized women's basketball this year in a way that is completely unprecedented. We have the TV ratings back from this weekend. We'll get to the men's in a little bit because it's a different conversation. But South Carolina, Iowa hit 18.9 million viewers, peaking at 24 million on Sunday afternoon. So for context, these are all per the Athletic. That's the most watched basketball game since 2019. Now, by basketball, I don't just mean men's and women's college basketball, though it does include that. I also mean the NBA, including every NBA finals game since 2019.
Yeah.
This also includes every World Series game since 2019, which obviously is not basketball, but just an important note.
Ouch.
And all but four college football games this year in 2023.
Wow. So the three playoff games, and then I guess one other game did more.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's exactly right. This Caitlin Clark, even losing to South Carolina, put women's college basketball on the map in a completely unprecedented way. In terms of getting eyeballs looking at screens. Like, I was walking through an airport while she was playing LSU, and if, like, you pass by every bar and everyone is watching the game. And I just, that's just never been true before. And I think it's a remarkable moment to think about not just the effect that one player can have on a sport, but also, I mean, very much an indicator of the changing tides. I mean, we've talked a lot over the years we've podcasted about the prioritization that the NCAA and TV ratings and TV companies give to women's basketball during March Madness season. And we'll get to the men's side in a little bit. But I think it goes without saying, like, the women's game had more viewers than the men's bracket this year, which is crazy.
Yeah, I don't want to brush past this point because to me this is such a historic moment, right? This is obviously the first time that the women's final has surpassed the men's final. And I mean, if 2024 ends and the ranking of TV ratings by sport goes NFL, college football, and then women's college basketball, that would be one of the most remarkable things that's ever happened in American television history, to be quite honest with you. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think you and I are expecting this momentum to hold going into next season necessarily,
no.
But it's entirely possible that in 2024, the third most watched sport by peak viewership of any sport in America is going to be women's college basketball, which is, again, like a historic thing that has never happened before and is a remarkable model of growth for that sport, but also is just a remarkable testament to a very, very unique and singular force, which is Caitlin Clark.
Right. Like, I don't want to take anything away from this, but the reality is these viewers will, I think some of them will stick around, but the viewers will go down because Caitlin Clark is going to go to the WNBA. And the reality is 2 years ago when South Carolina won their most recent other championship, viewership was like, I believe the athletic stat was around 280% less. Right, like this is the Caitlin Clark phenomenon. And at the same time, though, we are seeing, I think, a ton of stars in women's college basketball right now that are a supporting cast for her. And thinking about the men's side just for a minute, and we'll talk about that whole tournament in a sec here. But just thinking about the men's side, we talked before the tournament about a lack of stars on the men's side this year. There were just not a lot of recognizable faces. And when you look at the women's side, you know, even just Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark, even if you only know those two, and then you add in other names like Paige Beckers and whoever, even if you only know those two, that's a rivalry that gets people say, oh, I want to watch those games because I know those girls hate each other.
Yeah.
And that makes you interested.
Mm-hmm. 100%. It'd be really interesting, before we move over to the men's side, it'd be really interesting to see what happens to WNBA ratings with Caitlin Clark. Like, if her as a professional is going to be as compelling to people as her as kind of the underdog school college girl will be interesting. Right. I think what team she gets drafted to will also have a factor. But it'll be interesting to see if there is a big uptick in WNBA viewer ratings come this fall. Angel Reese is also, she also declared for the NBA or WNBA draft, which means that she wants to lose to Caitlin Clark one more time when it comes to a draft order.
I think it's time to have a conversation, Chad, before we go to the men's game.
Please.
It's time to talk. And the question is, why does the establishment of the women's game hate Caitlin Clark? This is a controversial question, I think this is the place where we talk about the crunching tackles of sports. In other words, why is everyone so jealous of her success? Because I think that's what this is, plain and simple, to be honest.
This has become a really, really weird part of our culture. I was watching the women who were doing kind of the ESPN pregame roundtable kind of thing, and whenever someone would say or argue that Caitlin Clark is like the greatest of college sports, all of these people were immediately like jumping to gatekeep for other people historically, like past history, more recent history, whether it's Candace Parker, Maya Moore, Sue Bird, Deanna Taurasi, like Breonna Stewart, the list goes on and on and on. And so they, at one point, they did like the Mount Rushmore of women's college basketball, and they included Caitlin, but she wasn't first, and they had other people. The woman who Caitlin Clark beat for the all-time points record came out with some very weird comments in which she said that in her mind, her record had not been beaten because when she played, there was no three-point line. And so, I mean, whatever. I really don't care about that. Other WNBA players have been strangely critical of Caitlin, as have college opponents. Obviously, historically, she really has a lot of real estate in Angel Reese's head that she has leased out. So I'm really not sure what's going on. I think jealousy obviously is the biggest part of it, which mixed with just competitiveness, which is that if these other women think that they are as good as Caitlin Clark, they're probably really confused why Caitlin Clark is so much more popular than them. Which to that, I would say, like, why is Steph Curry the most popular men's player? Like, why are kids buying his jerseys and not Draymond Green's jersey? It's because his style is uniquely entertaining, and so is Caitlin's.
Like, and also, he like doesn't assault players on the court, but that's
neither here nor there. In the Draymond Green comparison, at least. But I do feel like she is the female Steph Curry, just her game. Right.
That's objectively true.
She's a great passer. She's launching from the parking lot. She can drive to the basket and finish really well under the rim. Like, she has that type of game that no one else in women's basketball can replicate at her level of quality. Mm-hmm. No one plays her game as well as she does, and she just so happens to play the most entertaining style of basketball that's the most trendy right now. And so to me, it makes perfect sense why she's by far the most popular women's women's basketball player. But if I was another WNBA player or a college opponent or a opposing coach, and to be clear, like other coaches like Dawn Staley and Gina Auriemma have been incredibly complimentary of Caitlin Clark and what she's done for the game. Mm-hmm. But if I were all the people, I would be so thrilled that there were more eyes being drawn to the sport. If I were WNBA players, I would be trumpeting Caitlin Clark's horn as much as I possibly could, because it's very possible that more people are going to watch WNBA. And then guess what happens, John? If more people watch WNBA,
but
the other people start making more money.
Whoa! No way!
Like, I don't want to say like
work.
Yeah, like I don't want to come out. Like, don't quote me as saying Caitlin Clark is the meal ticket for every WNBA star to make more money. Like, I don't think that's necessarily a one for one thing. But if Caitlin Clark is great and popular, everyone in the sport wins. And so tearing her down quite literally serves no purpose whatsoever. Everyone should be hyping her up as the Michael Jordan of women's basketball, because everyone wants to watch Michael Jordan.
See, the problem here, Chad, and I don't think it's too classy to dunk too hard in the WNBA, but I'm going to dunk a little bit on the WNBA because there are levels to this. The reality is people do not tune in to watch the WNBA for whatever reason. People already don't tune in that much. Obviously, way more people watch the NBA than the WNBA. That's just a fact. But the reality is the NBA is not like the most popular sport in the world or even in America. And the WNBA is significantly less popular than that. The closeout game of the WNBA Finals last year in 2023 had 889,000 viewers at its peak.
Under 1 million.
Under 1 million viewers. The clinching game of the WNBA Finals in 2023. 889,000 viewers.
Like, significantly more people were probably were watching like Jake Tapper on CNN. Like, that's
objectively
like,
true.
That wouldn't be successful if you were a cable news company averaging under 100 million in primetime, under 1 million in primetime, you would go out of business.
That's just a fact. And the reality is literally 17 million more people tuned in to watch Caitlin Clark play South Carolina over all of those WNBA players
literal number,
in the
17.
Biggest game of their season. 17
no,
million
18,
more people.
18.
Oh, yeah, because it was 18.9.
Yeah.
You're right. 18 million more. There are levels to this, and these people are salty because try as they might, they have not gotten anywhere near those numbers, and they're mad about it. And that's just a fact. And the other fact, all these ex-UConn dynasty players are complaining about the fact that they didn't get as much numbers as Caitlin Clark and they're better. And, you know, Caitlin Clark, her legacy doesn't really count because she didn't win a college title. The reality is their teams were stacked, right?
Correct.
They beat every single team in women's college basketball every single year for like a decade. And Caitlin Clark was just her. And like four other randos, you know, not to like denigrate them too hard, but in comparison, and she got them to a championship. And I think that's quite an accomplishment. I think everyone's super salty, maybe understandably so, but it's just too bad for them. That's my take.
Yeah. It's just, you're missing out. You're missing out on the show. Like, I don't know. You're not,
I don't know what
you're
to
not
tell
Caitlin
you.
Clark. She is her. Do you want to talk about the men's tournament?
I think we should.
Do we want to talk about anything at all before Monday's final? Is there anything worth mentioning?
I think it's what's worth mentioning is that we came into this men's tournament sort of unsure of where it was going to go. And kind of in general, I think we both agreed that UConn was the favorite going into this tournament. But
100%.
UConn was the favorite sort of just because there was an absence of other real contenders in our mind. And I think for both of us, it sort of felt like that, mostly because we just like, I didn't really know the other roster super well. And no one had really grabbed my attention. So I came into this sort of being like, well, I guess it's UConn. But the more you watched, the more you kind of realized like, oh, there are some teams that maybe could give UConn a shake. But it wasn't, in the end, it was not even close. And the craziest stat of the men's tournament for me this year was that UConn ultimately did beat Purdue in the men's championship to win their second straight title. But they won it by a cumulative 140-point differential.
Yeah, which the is whole the, tournament.
The whole tournament, which is the biggest point differential win over a tournament in March Madness history. UConn rolled. They won their last three games, I think, by at least 13 points.
Yeah.
Which is the first time I think that's ever happened, if I remember the stat correctly. And that just underlines, like, there were some interesting stories. There were not a lot of stars other than Zach Edey and a few others. DJ Burns, we'll get to NC State maybe. But, like, the reality was UConn rolled to this tournament championship without breaking a sweat. And that's the story.
Yeah, obviously UConn is the story. But before we get there, John, one of the things this is a larger conversation, but one of the things that's amazing about sports mm-hmm. are the stories that come out of them. And a lot of times we go into a tournament like this looking for a star. Like you and I talked about on this podcast, how there wasn't a male superstar. There was no right. Zion Williamson. There was nobody who was really going to elevate to that level. But the awesome thing about sports is that when there isn't a star, we'll make one. Like something will happen. Someone will become a star in the moment. And that person was DJ Burns.
That's correct.
And that team was freaking awesome. All tournament long. We talked about them a little bit last time. They had to win the ACC tournament outright to even make the NCAA tournament, mm-hmm. which they do, beating Duke and North Carolina on the way. And then they continue rolling all the way to the Final Four, being carried by this giant man with the fastest footwork and the softest hands you've ever seen, who is just an awesome personality. People mm-hmm. like Nikola Jokic are talking about him in press conferences. Like, everyone loves this guy. And I don't know what he's going to do next. I hope that I think he is a senior, unfortunately. But, like, the name, image, and likeness money that he could make next year would be off the charts. He's not an NBA player mm-hmm. at all. But he, like, the quintessential college Cinderella player. And it was just so much fun.
I think Cinderella is a
and
perfect
I say that
comparison.
As an NC State hater.
Right. Cinderella is a perfect comparison because who DJ Burns is an NFL lineman professionally trained in ballet.
Yeah.
That is what DJ Burns looks like when he moves around the court. And it's remarkable. The closest comparison that I could think of, and this is a shout out to Liberty fans everywhere who may be listening to this podcast, was former Liberty GOAT Mayo Baxter-Bell. Mm-hmm. I saw a lot of similar moves out there that reminded me of our esteemed center from back in the day. And he was just great.
Can I go on a brief tangent? I just want to clarify something.
Sure.
This is just a brief point of terminology.
Okay.
I will accept the fact that DJ Burns is a Cinderella player because he does right. not look like the kind of guy who should be starting for an ACC roster. Mm-hmm. However, there is a specific criteria to be a Cinderella school and be on a Cinderella run that NC State was not a Cinderella team.
That's
and I've heard that being said, and I would just like to state for the record that if you are a big school in a Power 5 conference and have won a national championship in your history, you are not and will never be a genuine Cinderella. Like, this was not Loyola Chicago or FAU or whatever. Like, this is not that. And we need to stop using that word to describe NC State.
I think, to be fair, everyone mostly agreed on that.
Okay.
At least
I've heard it.
I think the term that was more thrown around was like Cinderella-ish. because we didn't have a Cinderella, and like they were an 11 seed, right?
Doesn't matter.
They came in. It was an unlikely run, right?
Yes.
I never had the feeling that they were the Cinderella of the tournament. I think what happened is we didn't have one.
Correct.
But I think they were the likable team of the tournament, and like it was the closest thing to a Cinderella that we had. But I think you're right that to label them officially a Cinderella is wrong.
Correct. I think that's all I'm saying. They were the most likable team. They were the underdogs, not a Cinderella.
I think it's time to talk about the American Pep Guardiola, Dan Hurley, because the star of March Madness this year was the absolutely insane hand waving of UConn head basketball coach Dan Hurley. That man is insane. He was pushing his players, like he was stepping onto the court in yesterday's championship game and making his players move in different directions by pushing
special stuff.
It was insane, and it makes some people mad, but I think the reality is I've seen that stuff in soccer for so long that I kind of love it deep down. Like, I'm not a UConn guy, obviously. I'm kind of indifferent to like whether UConn as a school wins titles. And obviously if you're a Duke guy and you're like, oh, the Blue Bloods, you know, need to keep their status, whatever, maybe you're salty about UConn winning. I think UConn is a tremendous story, and I think the job that they've done there in the last 25 years is one of the most insane things that has ever happened.
Wait, are you expecting me to now gatekeep being a Blue Blood school as a fan of Chapel Hill? Is that what you're expecting me to do?
You might. I don't know if you're going to, but if you did, you'd be wrong, because UConn is officially a Blue Blood. We're saying that right now. Six titles in 25 years. That's as many as North Carolina has in its entire history.
I love Dan Hurley. He's by far the best coach in college basketball. Like, if you include Bill Self, John Calipari, Mark Few, he's better than all of them as a coach. The retired guys like Krzyzewski and Roy Williams and Mark and Jay Wright are gone. So like Dan Hurley is clearly the top dog.
He's that guy
in college basketball coaching. He is unbelievably cool.
He's a maniac.
Funny. He's just complete madman on the sideline. And he builds great teams, John. Like, again, like, he's not recruiting at quite blue blood level. He's close, but he's not at the Duke or the Kentucky or the Kansas or the UNC level of recruiting. He's not quite there. But with the teams he constructs, which are good prospects, he builds amazing teams. He has great big men. He has great guards. He has a great inside-outside game. They pass the ball well. They post up. They shoot threes. They do every single piece of what it takes to play basketball correctly. They are, I mean, you talked about Pep Guardiola. Like, they are like the Manchester City type of just well-oiled machine that just does the reps and does everything right and positions and spaces and passes. And they're such a fun team to watch. And I found myself genuinely not caring that they were up by 15 to 20 points at all times during these games, because watching them was such a joy. I do want to say, like, there was a game in the second weekend, I think it was the Elite Eight, where they went on a 30-0 run.
It was against Illinois. Yeah.
Yeah, it was tied. It was 19-19. And then the next time they checked the score, it was like 49-19 or something like that. I might have that a little bit off, but like it went from tied to a 30-point lead in like a quarter, and they went on a 30-0 run, and it was some of the most unbelievably dominant basketball I've ever seen. It was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, they played Illinois, Alabama, and Purdue, and I don't think any of us before the tournament would have said that those teams would necessarily, other than Purdue, would necessarily have really put them to the test. But they could have. It's March Madness, right? And they cruised past every single one. Elite Eight, Final Four, Championship. Genuinely, other than a few moments early in each of those games, they were not contests by the second half.
Yeah.
And I think that says a lot about where this team is at, right? Last year, going into the tournament, UConn was a solid team that we were not fully sure if, you know, they were going to hit the heights that they could. And then the tournament started, and slowly, you know, teams fell away, and UConn breezed to the championship in the end. And that ended up being the story. They played San Diego State in the final, and it was not a contest. And we finished that, and we're like, wow, really the story was UConn all along. And then UConn lost three of its starters, and then Dan Hurley just built this whole team back and won another championship. And yeah. Again, we're looking at this whole season, and you're like, wow, well, that was interesting. Where was the jeopardy there? And he built a team that just, like, it's so hard to contest them right now. I think that's remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, Zach Edey, who is the best player of the year in college basketball, mm-hmm. at least in the first half, played what I can only describe as the perfect half of basketball in the championship game. He yep. was unbelievably good, and they were down by like 6 points at halftime, and mm-hmm. they came out with the second half, and it was just over. Like much like Caitlin Clark against South Carolina, like, you're getting the best version of your opposing superstar, and it's like brushing a fly off your shoulder. It was just light work for these dominant teams. I would like to talk about the state of the NCAA tournament, but before I do that, John, mm-hmm. I would like to talk a little bit about what it takes to be a dynasty and what it takes mm-hmm. to be a quote unquote blue blood. I'm not gonna gatekeep UConn status as a school in college basketball, but I would like to just kind of wonder aloud, what is it going to take for their legacy to translate to recruiting? Because there does seem to be a sense to which, and sometimes it's because of the coaches and sometimes it's because of the program, but schools like UNC, Duke, Kentucky, Louisville, Kansas, to a lesser degree, Gonzaga, I mean, I could keep going down the list. Like, there is a tier, it seems, of recruiting. UCLA would be in that top tier as well. In terms of, like, players want to go to these schools because of the program or because of the coach or because of the tradition and history of the school. And it still does feel like, no matter how much short-term, and I mean the last quarter century or so, short-term mm-hmm. success UConn has, it doesn't quite translate to getting the number one players in the country in the same way that Duke and Kentucky do. And I just wonder, like, how long does it take for that kind of reputation to reset and for someone to be like, oh, I'm the number one prospect in the country, and I want to go play for Dan Hurley at UConn. Like, is that a feasible thing that's going to happen, or is this just not really the UConn model?
I mean, I think it's clear that Dan Hurley doesn't really care about your star status, is really the vibe I get. And I think it is a very much a Pep Guardiola kind of thing. It's like, do you fit my system?
I mean, that's fair, but like, Erling Haaland wanted to go to him. Like,
right. There is a reality to that, but I'm saying, like, Pep built that machine first.
Sure.
Haaland was not there for quite a while.
Sure.
And Pep was putting pieces to fit into that roster that made sense for his system. And I think we've seen, not to go too soccer tangent a little bit, but I mean, we've seen Haaland make that team better and also make it worse because he is diverged from his system to fit in a superstar. I think what we see in UConn is a team that is greater than the sum of its parts. You know, I don't know that all those players are going to be NBA players, right? But NBA players do not win college championships. That's just reality. There are some who do. I mean, that Zion Williamson team did not come even close to winning the championship. And that
team
was
really good
all
Kentucky
NBA
players have not won championships.
That's exactly right. And so, yeah. Like, Calipari is leaving Kentucky, right? And there were rumors about Dan Hurley going to Kentucky, and he was like, absolutely not. And I think the reality is that to him, the goal is winning. The goal is not recruiting.
So what you're saying, John, is that Dan Hurley is not going to recruit Bronny James just because he's going to grow the team's Instagram account?
I think that's objectively correct.
I think that's right. Bronny James is, of course, in the transfer portal, as he also declares for the NBA draft. So side point.
So, like, I mean, if you recruit really good players to your team, you have in college basketball, you have one swing. And then most of the time, if they're that good and they're that much of an NBA prospect, they're going to leave. And I think Dan Hurley is much more interested in building a roster that, you know, even with turnover, is going to have pieces that fit into his system. And I think it, winning back-to-back titles, I think we will see better and better players go there. But I think, at least as a recruiting novice, I wouldn't say I'm an expert in how this world works. In my mind, it makes perfect sense the way they're going about their business.
Yeah, I mean, just from my point of view, and the John Calipari news obviously kind of feeds into this, is that it's very hard. Like, coaching and recruiting are two different skills, and we've talked about this, and not many people have both. What made Coach K, what makes Nick Saban so elite, is that they were the ones who could master both. They could sit in your living room and convince you to join the team, and then they could make you better once you got there. John Calipari is a great recruiter. He is not a great coach. He does not make people on his team better. He's very good at getting very, very talented prospects to come for their 18-year-old season and then leave to be a top-trend draft pick and get molded into a better player by NBA coaches. But he is not the guy. I really am not sure what Arkansas think they're getting with him. It'll be
especially
really interesting
at this point.
Yeah. Very, very strange. But I view Dan Hurley more so in the coaching category. And I think obviously you sit down in the you sit down in the living room with the player and you've got back to back rings on your finger. That's gonna do some recruiting for you, but he seems like the guy who's gonna say, like, this is a team first program. We're about the team. Your playing time, your shots, all of that is secondary. And I think that he will get better players, but I just really respect the way that he goes about his business as a coach. I guess lastly, we kind of want to talk a little bit about this tournament and some rumors surrounding March Madness. And I just want to say, March Madness is perfect.
Is it?
It's yeah.
Maybe we should have this conversation. Is March Madness perfect in its current edition?
Yes.
Yes, it is. Okay.
It is as. Do you agree?
I think we're in an interesting spot. I think that I don't think it should change. There have been rumors. There have been lots of stories. I read a whole like huge long read by ESPN of them like talking to different commissioners and talking to Coach K and asking people, you know, like, what is the future of this product? And I think the short answer is that it shouldn't change because everyone loves March Madness. The longer answer, though, I mean, last year's numbers were the worst championship numbers ever, 14.69 million, according to Turner Sports. This year was slightly better. UConn-Purdue hit 14.8. The reality is, obviously, like, TV deals and the NCAA make decisions based on viewership. And we have not had a ton of compelling stories, like truly compelling, other than UConn in the last 2 years. And I think to a degree that's hurt viewership. And maybe that's just a fluke. Like, this is just the UConn dynasty and like it just is what it is. But I feel like there is a flip side that, you know, with all the things we've talked about with college sports in general, I don't know if they'll think about, you know, do we need, would a bigger field produce more upsets or less upsets? I think is kind of the question. And also, how much does the NCAA want more upsets? Or do they, like the SEC commissioners quoted in that ESPN article I read, basically saying like, you know, we want more of our teams in the field so that, you know, we can produce more upsets because we have lots of good programs that are looking to get in. And you've got all these big conferences that are angling for spots. And I think expanding ultimately hurts the little guys. And so I think expansion would only be worthwhile if it funneled more money to smaller schools. And I just don't think that's the way it would go. And so I really think expansion would really be a serious issue and not a positive.
Yeah, I'm not super concerned by the TV rating side of it, really, to me, because, like, it was literally 2 years ago that the Kansas-UNC final did, like, 18.1 million. Like, that's that true. Wasn't that long ago. That was 2 years ago. Like, there's a sense to which UConn aren't that big of a brand.
Mm-hmm.
Last year they were playing San Diego State, not a big brand. Purdue's not a giant brand. Like, there's a level to which, and I think we talked about this a couple years ago, where we really like little teams winning early, but at the end of the mm-hmm. tournament, you want to see Kentucky, Kansas, UNC, Duke, Louisville, UCLA in the later rounds. Like, I even think that if NC State had beaten Purdue, that it would have done bigger numbers, because that's a historic school. They've won a national championship. They have a big national fan base. Obviously, I mean, I live in Raleigh. It would have been just complete madness here, but I'm not super worried about it. I think UConn will only get more prominent if they continue this run, and if not, like, I think John Shire is doing a great job at Duke. I think Hubert Davis is going to win a national championship at North Carolina. UCLA seems to be in a pretty good spot. Like, this is going to be okay, I think, in terms of these larger schools recovering. And I'm not worried about the popularity of the sport going further, particularly because of NIL and the fact that players might be staying longer in college.
Right.
Armando Bacot for UNC just finished his fifth year. Like, if these guys can be compensated and want to play their junior, senior season, fans get to spend 3, 4, 5 years with these guys. It's going to be great. People are going to like the players. They're going to invest in the storylines. I think this is going to get better, not worse. And I genuinely feel like the worst thing you could possibly do is add more teams to this tournament.
I think I agree. I think you're right that, like, we'll see a lot more of those, of that brand of player that's not going to succeed in the NBA stick around in college instead of, like, going to the G League.
Yeah.
There's no point to go to the G League. Most of those players are never going to make it. And I think players know that they can make at a big school almost as much money just playing at that school in a college mold. I think the problem, this isn't the tournament's fault. I think the problem maybe that we're seeing just in terms of viewership is that the big schools suck more than anything.
Right.
Like, right. That's the problem.
But the solution to that problem is not adding more bad schools, right?
Like, I agree, 100%.
I don't want to see the 11th best ACC tournament, ACC team in March Madness. Like,
no.
That doesn't make it better.
Right, and we see, obviously, like, FIFA expanding the World Cup is a great kind of comparison. That is going to happen and is happening, and it will absolutely dilute the product. And you'll have mediocre countries playing mediocre soccer, and just that creates boring games. That creates an uninteresting product. And so I think the way March Madness is awesome. I think that the ratings issue, and I think the kind of the overall interest issue, just is mirrored. Really, I mean, the women's popularity this year is a perfect example of the fact that interest is there and the viewers will go wherever the interesting stories are. And the reality is that other than Dan Hurley and the sun shining down upon his dome, there was not that much interesting in the men's game this year.
Yeah.
Because teams like Baylor and UNC and Kentucky underperformed.
It's just, I think it's worth saying that we're going to look back on the past 20 years of college basketball as a real, like, golden age in terms of, like, you've got Jim Boeheim, you've got Kay, you've got Roy, Bill Self, John Calipari, the guy at Louisville whose name I won't say because I hate him, Rick Pitino. Like, you've got so many great just icons of the sport. And we saw the same thing with the NFL after, like, Brady and Breeze and Manning are gone. It takes fans a couple years to figure out who their new guys are. And then obviously by the time you get to 2024, everything's fine. One of the greatest superstars of all time is dating an NFL player. Everyone recovers. Everything's great. But I think we're kind of just in that little of a transition period where it just people are seeing a lot of new faces, new teams. And it just takes a little bit for people to kind of get settled in. The same thing happens, like, movies have good years and bad years. We talked about 2023 is this great movie year. 2024 is going to be an off year. Like, that happens. These things kind of do cycle. And I think that it's just going to be the adjustment period of we were so privileged to have witnessed these historic coaches for the last 20 years. And now we're trying to figure out who the new guys are and what schools they're at. And I just don't think, I think that trying to fix a problem now would be fixing mm-hmm. something that's not broken and would only do more harm. I'm not excited for the new World Cup. I'm not excited for the new Champions League mm-hmm. with more teams. I don't think it helps anything to add more bad teams. Like, if you deserve to be there, qualify under the existing format. Like, I really right. didn't want to see Liberty in the NCAA tournament. They would have gotten killed. Like,
oh, this year? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I don't want to see Wake Forest in the NCAA tournament. Like, I just, it's not, I don't think it makes it any better. I do think the college football playoff model is better, because I think four was always too little, but there is a sweet spot. And I think that the reason why March Madness has existed so long in its current format is because it is in the sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very, very passionate about this. I really, really don't want it to change.
I think it shouldn't change. I think you hit the nail right on the head. And I think it is interesting because, like, college is very much about the coaches. The personalities that endure, that create a brand in college, are the coaches. And then you have some players that rotate in and out, and some that stay longer and some that move on fast. It's much easier to kind of create a long-term college football team than it is to create a long-term college basketball team. And that's just the reality of the way the structure works. And so right now, as there is like a changing of the coaching guard, I think we are seeing, you know, I think you're right, a little bit of that downturn. But we've got great coaches. We've got Dan Hurley. We've got Nate Oates.
Yeah.
You know, that are not like new blood, but are newer, along with some of the new coaches that are coming up. And I do think that as those personalities establish themselves, I think that the brand will not, like, it will not suffer. But I do think that just right now, I think we're in an interesting spot. I'm very interested to see where the women's game goes from here. I think that my question mark from this year isn't, will the men's game survive? The question is, like, where does the women's game, specifically in college, leverage this momentum to go? Because ultimately, we know that dynasties don't help your ratings. If South Carolina wins every championship for the next 10 years, much like UConn did before, that doesn't help.
Yeah. I mean, there's two sides of it, right? There's the will Caitlin Clark going to the WNBA help the NBA? We've talked about that. There's the what's happening in college right now. But there also is, I think, a third part, which is, who are the 13-year-old girls watching Caitlin Clark right now who are like, oh, I want to mm-hmm. do that? Like, we saw a bit of a delay post Steph Curry, where everyone was trying to be Steph Curry in their high schools, and then they went to college and they joined the NBA, and all of a sudden you have Damian Lillard and Devin Booker, all these guys who are like doing Steph Light. And I like, give me more mini Caitlin Clarks. Like, 5-10 years from now, when all those girls go to college, maybe this game is exponentially better than it even is right now.
Am I dumb? Surely Damian Lillard is like the same age as Steph Curry.
Isn't Steph like 34?
How old is Damian Lillard?
I thought he was like 29. I could be way off.
To me, he looks like he's 34. I don't know.
I could be wrong.
No, he's 33 and Steph is 36. Yeah. Oh,
whoops. Okay.
I think he would be deeply offended that you called him a Steph Curry light.
Well, he is. I mean, I'm not taking that back.
But no, I think the point stands, right? And I think that obviously basketball moves in waves like all sports do. And what we're seeing right now in the men's game is absolutely enormous 7-foot like behemoths dominating the college game.
But I mean, I could argue that Victor Wembanyama wouldn't have the game that he has if not for Steph Curry. I can argue that.
Sure. But like, again, is he trying to be Steph Curry? I definitely would say not. Steph Curry
he's trying to shoot from Steph Curry range.
Right, but Steph has changed the game objectively.
Yes, yeah.
Right, that's just true.
Right.
But like, Nikola Jokic not trying to be Steph Curry. Nikola Jokic is doing Nikola Jokic, and he's doing a great job at being Nikola Jokic.
Yeah.
Is it normal for him? I just, this is a tangent, and then I feel like it's my last thing.
Okay.
I would like to give a shout out to the thing that's been kind of going around social media lately, which I was not aware of, which is Nikola Jokic trying to shoot from his own half constantly and trying to get a shooting foul at the end of halves while just like lobbing a ball just like in no direction. He just does a shooting motion. He's like on a quest. I'm obsessed.
I don't know. Like, I need someone to explain to me why that is not an actual shooting foul. Like, to me,
that's what I'm saying.
Like, to me, that should be called. They should give him free throws. I feel very strong. Like, there is no rule that says you have to be within a certain distance of the 3-point line to actually be attempting to shoot.
And the reality is, he can make those shots.
Correct.
As we've seen. So, like, correct. They are taking away points from my prized Serbian man, and I don't like it.
All right. One of the all-time guys. yeah. Anything else on college basketball this year, John?
I don't think so. I ended up enjoying this year. I wasn't sure if I was going to, but I think it ended up being fun. I think we got the storylines we wanted. Good, it was tournament. Worth following. It was not an all-time tournament.
No.
On either side, I don't think.
No.
Well, I guess for Caitlin Clark it was, really. But I think in terms of drama, it wasn't this year doesn't for me go down on either side as like the greatest year of all time or anywhere close to it.
Yeah.
But it was worth watching, and I think that's what makes March Madness and the brand so powerful.
Where does our sporting attention go next? Obviously for me, my eyes turn to Augusta National. For you, Arsenal are in the midst of a title race and a Champions League challenge. Like, what's up next for our sports consumerism and extensively this podcast as well?
To me, it's all soccer now. I am Arsenal like here on out until mid May. Like, that is all I'm paying attention to, and then the NBA comes around and hockey and whatever. But like, I am one sport.
That's the wrong answer. The correct answer was Formula One, which I am now contractually obligated to bring up once again on this podcast and say that Formula One is good. Max came back to win in Japan.
Mm. Oh, I'm so surprised. Wow. Yeah,
so that's kind of disappointing. But the Ferrari chase continues. Carlos Sainz is going to be one of the sports stories of this season, as he's been denied a Ferrari seat and yet is consistently dominating his own teammate and has won one of the first four races of the tournament of the season this year. So, yeah, worth mentioning, I would say.
Thank you for our we'll need to come up with a Formula One corner name.
Checkered flag corner.
I've already done this. He's ready. we'll call it crossing the finish line.
Yeah, I like
that'll
that.
That'll be our ending. That's our good. Ending segment. That's really good. Yeah.
anything else in the culture that we need to discuss, or are we good?
I think we're good. I mean, like, my mind recently went to like the U.S. Department of Justice suing Apple, but like, we can't talk about everything on this podcast.
I have thoughts about that, actually. Let Tim Cook cook.
I think there's a reality to which, as much as we want to cover every aspect of the culture on this podcast, some things we should leave to other podcasts. No, I don't know.
I would like to end with this. The Justice Department could do well to watch these other WNBA players criticize Caitlin Clark and realize that it goes against everything we stand for as a country to stifle greatness. Candace Parker, respect Caitlin Clark. Joe Biden, respect Apple. Let our great artists and people of entrepreneurship do what they do in excellence, and don't stifle them. I feel that's how I feel.
And I feel like comparing Tim Cook and antitrust legislation to Caitlin Clark and the WNBA is why, if you listen to this podcast, why you've continued to listen to this podcast over the last 4 years.
I think so. I feel really, really good about where we've ended up today.
Well, thank you all very much for listening. We hope you enjoyed March Madness.
Yeah, this has been a great time. Congrats. I should say congrats on winning our bracket challenge. You did a great job.
Thank you, sir.
The champion. Thank you, sir. It was the safe pick. It was the obvious pick. But you had to have the courage to make it, and you did. And I did. For that, you should be mildly commended, I would say.
I accept your mild commendations.
Yeah, happy
and
to.
Congratulate Anytime, on really. Finishing not even second in our group, to be quite honest.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when you go with the front runner, sometimes you get it more right than you do wrong, but you get less glory in it. And that's just how it is.
Oh, well.
Oh, well. Thank you all so much. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. I think that as of right, pending something very unexpected, we are going to do gambling part two.
That's right.
Pending something really urgent and important coming out, like Tiger Woods winning the Masters, that would obviously usurp...
Emergency
everything.
Pod, yeah.
Yeah. Immediate. It might be a solo pod, but it will be an emergency pod. Even if it's just me screaming into this microphone with all of that my diminished lungs have to offer post sickness.
I am really sad that we were not podcasting when Tiger Woods actually won the Masters, like the last time, because I think that would have been like, that would have been generational podcasting.
Would you like me to like re-enter that headspace and like recreate a podcast as if it was April of 2019.
Do you think you're capable of doing that?
If I watch the round again, I think
really?
So. Yeah, I think if I sat down to watch that entire final round and like cried a lot and then came on the podcast, I'd be like, you did it.
Ringers rewatchables, but it's Chad watching Tiger highlights.
If we get another pandemic, we could do that. We could
don't
just
speak that into existence.
That's what we did during COVID, didn't we? Just
that's,
watch
that
old
is
basketball games?
Objectively true. I yeah. watched so much sports reruns during class in college. It was
like
a remarkable
FIFA was
time.
Was posting World Cup finals just on YouTube for free, and everyone was like, ooh, Argentina, England, 19... whatever.
It was, shoot, what year was that?
80-something, probably? I don't know.
It was the Maradona year.
Wasn't he 80? 70?
I think that's the 82.
Okay, yeah, sure, I'm pretty whatever. Sure. Like, yeah. It was on YouTube, and we were all watching it because we had nothing else to do. Mm-hmm. Anyway, complete... total tangent. We're having a good time.
we are having a good
gambling
time.
Podcast next. So that's it's right. Going to be important. It's going to be meaningful. We're going to come with criticism of the leagues, criticism of the media, and constructive policy recommendations for governments. And we're excited for it. So until next time, we hope you all continue to be well and be safe, and we will talk to you later.
All right. Cheers, guys.